And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Melody. I'm from San Diego.
Yeah. Wow. Good evening. My name's Melody. I'm an alcoholic. And this is quite an honor and a privilege to be here tonight and to be speaking. And Larry, I want to thank you for asking me to do this. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I don't get asked very often, and that's fine. I'm more busy. So this is just a treat for me, and it's a treat at this time of year. I really love Easter. I got sober the week of Easter. My birthday is April 4th, and so it's coming up, and God willing, this next week I'll have 28 years. And so for me, it's a big deal for me. My cat doesn't care, my dog doesn't care, but for me it's a big deal, and I look forward to this week, and it's also a spiritual week for me, so it's just a great week, and I'm really looking forward to it. We tend to have our convention around Easter week, so I know that this week, tomorrow Clancy's speaking at Old Town Speakers Meeting in La Jolla, and I will be going to that, and we'll be taking some food and celebrating there, and then the week after we'll have our convention, and it's just a great week in San Diego. I really love it. I really love Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to say thank you to some of my friends here tonight. I have some friends from work here tonight. Tracy, thank you for coming. It's a treat. Thank you. Some people that I'm sponsoring. Allie, I love you. Allie, who went to a funeral today for somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous who did not survive this disease. 23 years old, too young to die. And two of my girlfriends, Laura and Edie, I love you. She came with me tonight. And then Val's here. Well, I went to high school with Val. And I don't know, if you don't believe that I partied in high school, go talk to Val afterwards. That's what we did. You know, so my story may not be for everybody. And, just go and listen to another speaker. You know, I'm just a run-of-the-mill alcoholic. This is my story. I can't change it. It is what it is. And I just hope that I can share some experience, strength, and hope with you. I do believe in the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a little bit of a cheerleader for Alcoholics Anonymous. I really love Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and really to a relationship that I have with a power greater than myself. And I really believe in this power greater than myself today. I have been rocketed to the fourth dimension. And I hope I get to share that with you. And I don't know if I'm going to get to that, but I hope I do. So I was this person that was born in 1959. My father was in the military. He's a Navy man. And he was not there when I was born. He was out at sea. And then when he came back, he had TB. And so he didn't get to hold me. And then when he did get to hold me, he didn't hold me. Because he's from that generation, they didn't really do that. You know, it was the wife's thing to hold the kids. And this is just I'm sure there's a lot of people from that generation that held their children, but my dad really didn't do that. And so I grew up not really, that relationship with my father was kind of off. And I just felt like, from a young age, I felt like something was wrong with me. And the first moment that I really kind of came to, you know, around 3 or 4 when I kind of realized that my dad was my dad, I noticed that my dad was drinking, and I just thought it was weird that, you know, Budweiser was more important to him than we were, and I intuitively knew something was odd with us, and you know, my mom was just my mom, and my mom loved me very much, and she's the one that always told me that she loved me. So I had the duality of, like, somebody never telling me that they loved me, and then my mom who told me that she loved me. So I had this, I grew up, I think, in a very normal family. I think that's really normal today. I didn't think it when I was growing up and when I was drinking, but I do now. I know that it's a normal family. And, you know, around 3 or 4, you know, whatever age it was that my mother took me to a grocery store, you know, I took some Chiclets, I stole them, and we had a bunk bed, and I was under the bunk bed counting my Chiclets, and my mother said, "Melody, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Nothing." And she was like, "You took something from the store, didn't you?" And she could always tell when I was lying. My mother just knew when I was lying. And I said, "No, I didn't." She said, "You did too. Come out and we're going to go back and take that back to the store." And so, you know, I knew I'd been caught and I knew I had to go and do what my mom wanted me to do. But you know what? I didn't take all the Chiclets. I took some out and I hid them. And I, you know, from a very young age, I was a liar and a thief and I, you know, I was stealing, you know, and that kind of followed me into my adulthood. And, you know, I don't know, and that's before I ever took my first drink. I was a liar, a and a thief. You know, that's before I ever took my first drink. And I think my first drink, I think I was about 4 or 5, and I took a swig off my dad's beer, and I thought, oh, those bubbles, I like that malt taste, you know. I didn't know it was malt at the time, but it was wheaty, and it had bubbles, and it was nice. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, but I heard my dad kind of caught me, because he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I've already done something wrong, you know. And so, you know, I didn't do that for a while. And then, you know, we moved from, I was born and raised in San Diego. I really love this area. Born at Balboa Naval Hospital, cost $7.49. Been cheap all my life. We moved over to Claremont from where the Navy stuff was. We moved over to Claremont, and I grew up there. And, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and in the 60s, people were smoking cigarettes and drinking beer. And, like, fourth and fifth grade, I was doing stuff like that. I was smoking cigarettes with people. The older people in the neighborhood, they'd teach me how to smoke a cigarette. And then if we were up at the park, there was a little park right near my house, and they would give us beer, and I would take a little bit of beer. And I just felt like a part of. I just felt like I was in with the in crowd, and that they liked me. And, you know, I didn't feel much like, my mother worked from the time I was 2, and so she was working all day, and I would come home, and I don't know if you remember the Payday movie, Bob Dale, the Payday movie. I would sit home and watch that, and I dreamed of being an actress, and I would waste my afternoons away from school doing stuff like that, watching the old movies, and, you know, Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, I just adored her, and, you know, Sid Charisse and Anne Margaret, and just the old time great guys. I just loved that stuff, and I really thought that I was going to grow up and be an actress, and I had that little idea in my head that I was going to be different. I was going to be somebody unique and different, and my life was going to be different. And, you know, I went to high school, and I was a dancer, and I was a cheerleader, and I was all those things that, you know, normal people seem to be, but I always felt a little odd. I just felt a little different. I felt like I wasn't enough for whatever reason, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with my father's and my relationship, but it was just, I just felt different. And, you know, but I was one of the group. I mean, we were partying. We would go down to, Mission Bay after football games and basketball games, and we'd get drunk. And I don't remember driving home a lot of times. And that was normal. I mean, throwing up at a high school party was normal. That is not abnormal to me. That's like you've had a good night. If you don't remember in the morning waking up or how you got home, that to me is normal drinking. I think that's okay, and that's what I was doing. And so I kept doing that, and I got in a relationship with a guy in high school that I remember he was like 6'3", and I would try to outdrink him, and that was stupid right there, because you really can't when you're not 6'3", you know. And I remember one party that I had that he didn't tell me that he was having a party, and I found out about it, and then I was really upset, and I drank at another party where we were drinking, you know, if you drink vodka in Kool-Aid, you don't really taste it as much, and you can drink a whole bunch until you pass that point, and then you can't stand or talk or walk or anything. And that's where I got that night. And I went over to his house, and, you know, he threw me over his shoulders. And as I was coming in the door, I put my head up, and the hair got ripped out of my hair. And then he put me in the back bedroom, and then I found my way to the bathroom and projectile vomited the whole bathroom. And then he got me in the car, and he said, take her, get her out of here. And that was normal drinking for me. I just thought that I had a good night, you know. And, you know, and my friend had to bring me to her house, and her mom had to call my mom and said, Melody can't come home tonight. She had some stuff to drink, and she's not feeling well. And so they covered up for me, because they were drinkers too. And we had a great time. And high school, went to high school, and from high school, went to college. In college, I continued to drink. Went to high school for dancing. And there was one thing that I thought I was going to get accepted at San Diego State, and I didn't get accepted to San Diego State. They said, if you were a male athlete or a minority, we would accept you. And I got accepted to the dance team, but I didn't get accepted to school because my grades weren't good enough. So I was really depressed. I mean, for a full summer, I don't remember much about that summer. I cried a lot. I drank a lot. And then I had to go to Mesa College. I love Mesa College. It's a great college. It's where I got my footwork to go to a university. But yeah, I was really depressed, and my drinking kind of kept going. And poor me, sad me, I didn't get what I wanted. I wanted to do this, and I didn't get it. And a girlfriend of mine, a very good girlfriend, she got to go to San Diego State, and I felt so different. And I felt like I just didn't feel, you know, you just feel less than. And so I went away to college. And in college, I studied theater. I was a dancer, and I fractured my back my first year, which was not really good. So dancing stopped. So I went into theater. And the only thing funny about theater is I really don't like having my picture taken. So if you want to have a career, do it in something that you're probably going to be successful at. And but, you know, so that didn't work out for me. Never made one penny off it. I'm glad I did it, but I didn't make one penny off that career. And I've been a waitress most of my life, so I was waiting tables in my 20s, and we would drink every night. I don't know about you as a waiter, but in those days, you know, 8 or 9 of us would go out after work, and, you know, there'd be everyone would buy a round. So at the end of the night, we'd have about 8 or 9 rounds in us, and then I'd try to drive home. And a lot of times I could drive home, and sometimes I couldn't drive home, and there were times that you know, I almost run people off the road. And I remember one distinct night where I looked out the window and I saw somebody's face as I was almost driving them off the road, that fear in their eyes. And I was just like, you know, you got to stop this. And there was a guy in college who I really wanted to date. I really liked him for 2 years. And I don't know about you, but this is my story. I didn't know how to sleep with you unless I was drunk. I didn't know how to have a relationship unless I was drunk. If I was drunk, I could talk to you. If I wasn't drunk, I was shy, introverted. I didn't really talk to people much that way. I was very shy. And, so we went on a date and, I got really drunk. And then we went over to his house, and him and his friend were smoking pot. And I was like, I don't smoke pot. I stopped that when I was in high school. And he goes, oh, no, come on, take a hit. And so I took a hit, and then my eyes closed. And then I was like, now I'm really out of control. I can't see. I'm drunk. I got to go home. So I argued with him for half an hour, and I'm like, I got to go home. I can't stay here. I got to go home. So I got in my car, and this is, I lived in Corona Del Mar, and this was in, he lived in Laguna Beach, and drove that freeway, and my last thought was, I can't do this. I'm never going to get this. I don't know how to do this, you know? Looking up at the stars going, they're going to come back and get me because I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to be here. I feel different. I don't know how to do this thing that people everywhere seem to be doing. I don't know how to do it. And the next thing I knew, I hit a telephone pole. And I was very fortunate that the cop that came to the scene drove me home. He knew my car was totaled. And in those days, that was in 1983, they were still pretty lenient. They're not that way today. today, they're gonna get you. They're gonna make you, you know, they're gonna test you. And if you test even 0.09, they're gonna take you in for DUI. And they've gotten a little bit harder. And it's still amazing to me today that we are still drinking and driving because the ramifications are huge. I mean, you know, just in the lawyer fees on the first DUI is about $10,000, and it goes up after that. It can even be more. And it's expensive. And when you hit my wallet, like, I'm funny that way. When it starts to get really expensive, I'm going to change my behavior. I happen to be an ER nurse, and I watch people take it into the ground. I mean, I'm like, I'm talking to them, and they're like, this is their third DUI. And I'm like, you ain't going to drive for years. I mean, years. And, you know, we hear it in the news all the time. They'll stop somebody for an automobile accident that killed somebody, and they don't even have a license anymore. They're driving without a license. And so it's still amazing to me, but that's our disease, and our disease takes us many interesting places. So I totaled my car that night, and my roommate, I had taken to a AA meeting a year before, and she had gotten clean and sober because I happened to be in another program. I went to Overeaters Anonymous in 1979. Remember when I didn't get accepted to that college? I started eating. And I was really depressed, so I ate a lot. And I gained a little bit of weight, and I was trying to be a dancer at 140, 150 pounds. And let me tell you, that's a little difficult. So I went to OA, and I had been in OA, and I had been working the 12 steps and stuff like that, but I never thought alcohol alcohol was my problem. And I don't know about you, but I come from an alcoholic home, and that little voice inside my head when I was about 7 or 8 years old said, I will never, ever be an alcoholic. I had made that vow with the God of my understanding at a young age. I said, I will never be like my dad. Never. And never going to be an alcoholic. And so I never really thought that that was a possibility, that I could be an alcoholic. And I thought I was too smart. I thought I knew too much. And I thought my background would suffice, that I would never have to be like my dad. And I guess I thought what alcoholism was, is I thought alcoholism was an older guy that let his family down, that... And I'm saying that in retrospect, because when I talk, I'm gonna get to my dad a little bit later. I love my dad very, very much. I just buried him 3 years ago, and I love my dad very, very much. He did the best that he could do. And when I go back and I did my 4-step and I made amends to my father, and I looked at the life that he led and how, what his life was like, my dad did a good job. I never went without a tricycle at Christmas. If I wanted something, we got it. You know, we went on camping trips. We went on vacations to, you know, to Colorado and stuff like that. But as a little kid growing up, my dad never picked me up. And he never told me, I love you. And when you're a little girl, and I know little boys feel this too, if an adult doesn't tell you that, your self-esteem and your self-worth, it's a crapshoot sometimes. You know, sometimes you don't do so good. Some people do great. Sometimes you don't do so good. And I had a really hard time with that. And I still, on some days, you know, I have a hard time trusting men still today about stuff like that. And it's something that I work on. I'm lying. I don't work on it. I do. I'm lying. Okay, because I have 3 cats and a dog, and I am the happiest female in the world. I'm telling you, when I wake up in the morning and the 3 cats are there and the dog's there, I'm like, I got it made. I got it made. I am so happy. And I just, you know, I a long time ago in the big book, it says, if you have a problem in this area, you do more in AA. You keep busy in AA. If you have problems in relationships, stop your whining. Get busy in AA, and I have found that that has worked for me. I get busy, and I do stuff, and I go to meetings, and I try to help other people, and that has made all the difference in the world. I'm not lonely. I really am not. I'm very, very happy. I could use another cat. You know, she's trying to get me another cat, you know. So I'm a pretty happy person, and I don't, you know, and I just leave that up to God. I said, whatever you want for me, if you want me to have somebody in my life, and if not, I'm fine with that. I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so I went off on a big tangent over here, and I don't know where I was, so give me a minute to come back to where I was. Oh yeah, so I totaled my car. So my roommate had the nerve to sit me down in the morning and say, you know, you may want to look at your drinking. And I'm like, really? Because I'm the one that took you to AA. I don't have a problem. And she goes, well, you may want to think about it. And that was in around January of 1983. And in the summer of like 1983, I got in a relationship with this guy at work where I was working, and he forgot to tell me that he was married. Oh, you know, they forget to do that sometimes. It's, you know, you think you know them, and then they say things like, oh, by the way, but I'm separated and I have 2 kids. And I was like, wow, I wasn't raised that way, you know, but now I like you and I'm drinking and I can make this work, you know. And so that's, you know, I did that for a period of time, you know. And then he was doing a lot of coke, and I would do coke occasionally, but I'm telling you, I'm, bottom line, I'm an alcoholic. I've done all the stuff that's out there. I mean, we were doing barbiturates and reds when I was going into 7th grade. I love that stuff. But, you know, it's a financial thing when you're in the 7th grade, and if you can't, you know, I couldn't afford it. So it's like, well, what can I do? You know, and I could drink. You know, I was drinking with people, and that I could afford. I remember my dad, like when he was drunk on the couch, his wallet would fall out and mysteriously $20 would be on the floor. And, in those days, in the 50s, and I mean in the 60s, in the early 70s, you know, $20, that's like a couple of six packs or more, maybe five, you know. So we were doing okay, you know, in those days, because I'd give a 20 and then somebody would go to the store and they'd buy it, and I was in, and they liked me, and they said, you can come back anytime, here's your two cans. And and I don't know about you, but in those days we were drinking things like Old English 800. Do you remember that? And I was drinking like the little club drinks. We'd get a couple of the club drinks and drink three or four, you know, of those. And those were like, in those days, they were like tequila sunrises, which tequila is probably my favorite drink of all time, with a beer. Yeah. So, you know, that's what we were drinking. And so she said, you need to go to AA. And I said, that's not my problem. So I got in this relationship and that kind of, I got hurt because, you know, he was using one night. He had a big party at his house. I have a problem with men in parties. I don't know what that is, but I go to their house and everybody gets drunk and I get really drunk and then stuff happens. I can't say cuss words, right? Right. So I am going to abide by the rules. And I am not always a rule follower. I drive 80 most of the days. You know, he got really wasted, and I got really drunk, and I went to sleep in the bedroom, and the next thing I know, something happened to me that I wouldn't want to happen to anybody, not without their permission, and you know, I kind of crawled out of the house, and then the next couple of days, we were going on vacation, which I was paying for, because why? He was married and had two kids, so I was paying for everything, and I said, listen, it's either me or the drugs, and he said, well, that's the front door, and I don't know about you, but something inside me broke. There was a little piece of me that was this little girl that was like, once again, I'm not good enough. And so I broke. And I went away to Santa Barbara, which if you could go on a vacation, really, Santa Barbara? Yeah, it was amazing. But the way I spent my weekend is they had those little rental bikes with the little carriages at the little hotel that I was at. And I would drive into town to the liquor store, and I'd get like two or three bottles of wine, and I'd ride my little bike back to the hotel. And then I'd drink all night and cry. You know, like my life is so unmanageable. Like I'm nobody will ever, ever love me. And I did that was the whole vacation for three or four days, and then I came back to came back to where I was living and kept going. And around that time, you know, I was waiting tables. I'd sleep all day. I would go to work, and then we'd wait tables, and I wouldn't start drinking until like an hour before my shift stopped, because I can't wait tables if I'm drunk. I just am not somebody that can wait tables if I'm drunk. I know a lot of people can. I'm not one of those people. And so I'd start drinking an hour before my shift, and then we'd all go drink, and I was doing this every single night. And you know, one night I was in my room at home where I'd had some bottles of wine, and I just, something came out of me, and I don't know where it came from, but it was, God, please help me. And that was around November or December of 1983. And around February of 1984, maybe March, I got into some therapy because I was not doing well. I was numb. I was literally walking around numb. I wasn't feeling. You could have hit me, and I wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have known the difference anyways. I wouldn't have known, and I was dying, and I knew it. And so there was something inside of me that didn't want to die, so I went into therapy, and I told the therapist, you know, what was going on, and she said, you know, while we're working together, why don't we try not to drink? And I was like, wow, I just wasted a lot of money. I just gave you, like, I think in those days it was $75. I said, I gave you $75 and you're telling me not to drink? Didn't you just hear about the guy and my dad and all of that? You're not even touching that? You're telling me not to drink? And she was like, yeah, why don't we try not to drink for 30 days? And I thought, man, did I get the wrong therapist? You know? And I tried to do that. And in that time, I didn't go to an AA meeting, but I got really, really uncomfortable. And maybe about 30 days into it or whatever, I did go to a young people's meeting. And I remember around that time, too, I was telling people at work that it was April Fool's, for the April 1st, and which is tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Which I told them, I'm trying not to drink, and they were all laughing. They're like, oh, no, you're not. Don't worry. You'll be fine. Just, you know, just hold off for a little while. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to drink for a while. And And I don't know why I pick April 4th, 1984. I don't know what happened on that day, but something specifically must have happened that I said, this is my day. I went to this young people's meeting in Laguna Beach, and I sat next to this really cute guy, which, if you're going to AA meetings or every once in a while, there are a lot of really cute guys. And I was talking to him, and he goes, well, how many meetings do you go to? And I go, well, I go to two. I work as a waitress. I work nights, so I only go to two. And he goes, well, you're going to drink again. And I was like, oh, my God. Somebody was just really negative with me, and you hurt my feelings. And I just completely shut down, did this through the whole meeting, went home, had alcohol in my house, because I don't know about you, but as an alcoholic, you always have to have alcohol in your house. Why? Because you never know when people are going to come over, and you got to be sociable, and you have to have some alcohol. So I had alcohol in my house. I had beer, and I had wine. And so all night, I'd get up, and I'd go look in the refrigerator. And I kept thinking, I'm not going to drink until tomorrow. I'm not going to drink tonight. And then I'd go back in the bed. 30 minutes later, I'd be up and I'd be looking at it again. And the next morning, I went to a 7 a.m. meeting down on Balboa Island in Newport Beach. And I went for the rest, every single morning at 7 a.m. for the rest of the year. And then that first year, you know, the journey of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you think that somebody gets well in their first year, you are sorely mistaken. Because in my 11th year, I pushed somebody at work, got suspended for 2 weeks, got a title removed from me, and that was an anger that I had to look at my anger issue. And that was a little embarrassing at work when I came back and they were like, oh, how was your 2 weeks off, you're not a trainer anymore. And I really liked being a trainer. It was really fun what I did. I used to work for the Hard Rock Cafe, and I would go around and open restaurants, and I enjoyed that. It was really a fun time, but they took that title from me for doing that. And I can tell you, I got married when I was 40-something, and I met somebody in here, and we're divorced today. You know, I mean, stuff happens. You know, stuff happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. But this journey, I wouldn't miss it for the world. I wouldn't miss the last 28 years of my life for one penny. And I know that if I would be drinking, I wouldn't even have 28 years, you know. So I went to that meeting, and that got me sober. And this is how I was. I was tightly wound when I first came here, guys. Tightly wound. They gave me a commitment of where in those days we were allowed to smoke in meetings, and they had ashtrays between the chairs. You know, like there was one there, then a chair, then another one. And somebody would come and move the ashtray, and I was like the ashtray person. You know, so I'd go over and I'm like, you can't move the ashtrays. Gotta stay on the chairs, you know. There's one chair in between each ashtray. And people would just, you know, tap me on the back and go, Melody, you just keep coming back. And then I got promoted to coffee cups. And at that meeting, they had they're like porcelain coffee cups. And people would leave a little bit of coffee in them. After the meeting, they would go over, put it on the ledge, and leave a little bit of coffee in them. And I'm like, Nick, you can't leave coffee in the coffee cup. You got to pour it out. You know, what are you doing? I mean, this, come on. Don't you have any responsibility or self-respect? And he just, Melody, you just keep coming back, you know. And then they made me secretary, and that was a really, like, you know, that was, you know, that was the big thing. And everybody, you know, and... You know, I'm doing it the right way, and everybody's doing it the wrong way. And so, you know, you grow up. And then the first year, they gave me balloons. And to this day, when I sponsor people, I give them balloons when they get their first year, because I think balloons are kind of special, and you should be made to feel special. And then in my second year, I went to Europe. I backpacked through Europe, and I didn't go to one AA meeting while I was in Europe, but I can tell you I took the big book with me. And in the big book, when it talks about the men in war, when they were over in war, that they did better than some of the people over here, I went directly to God. In every single incident, wherever I was going, whatever I was doing, I asked God to follow me and to make my steps sober and to keep me sober, and that I was not going to drink no matter what while I was over there. And you know what? They drink in Europe. I don't know about you. You should go, but, you know, Oktoberfest, and then in France, it's the wine, and you can't even get through Ireland and Scotland and England without, yeah, I mean, they're just drunk all the time. I mean, they drink a lot, okay? And I'm Irish, so I can say that, I guess. You know, Europeans just drink. They just drink a lot. And it's a part of their culture, and I wasn't doing it in my second year, and so it was a little difficult. But I got through that, and I came back, and when I landed in New York, and I went to a couple of meetings in New York, and back on the road, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has been just all the way through, all the years. I've had back surgery. I've had some job changes that didn't go so well. My father dying was an interesting one. I mean, I remember when I went back and I made amends to my dad. And, amends are, we go and we do this fourth step with our sponsor and then a fifth step. And then out of that comes that list of people that you owe an amends to. And an amends is, you go and you say, I'm sorry for my behavior. And I remember my sponsor said to me, because I'd said to my dad, I'm really sorry that I expected you to be more than what you were. And I don't know if that really came out right. And she said, I don't know if that really came out right. It sounds like you were kind of double judging there in the same time. And I said, all I wanted you to say was that you loved me. And my dad, in his best way, said, Melody, we have our whole life for that. And I'm like, he did it again. He missed it. But at the end, my sponsor had the wherewithal to tell me. She challenged me. She challenged me. And she said, Melody, every time you leave that house, I want you to tell your dad that you love him. And I can tell you, that first night, I couldn't do it. I walked outside and I cried. And I said, I can't do this. I can't tell him that I love him. I have all these resentments. I hate him. He never told me that he loves me. And I went back in and I just, as I'm walking, I'm dead. But the next time, it wasn't so hard. And, 3 years ago, I got to be with my dad when he was sick at home. He had COPD, and he had been sick the last couple of months, and we had him on hospice at home. But he had fallen, and he broke 3 ribs, and I knew it was a done deal. I told my mom, I said, we're taking him home. He's going to be dead within a week. And that was on a Thursday night, and he died on Monday night. And on Monday, we were all there. I was holding his hand and stroking his hair, and I said, Dad, I love you very much, and I'll see you again. You owe me nothing. I owe you nothing, and we're good. We're good. And I know that today, and I know today I will see him again. And I know that he used to like jitterbugging in the 50s. He was a jitterbugger. And my dad, when I look back on how hard I judged him, my dad was a prisoner of the Korean War, and he was over there for 18 months. And if anybody of you that's ever been to war, war's not a pretty thing. War is never pretty, and people die, and you lose friends, and a lot of young people die. And, he lost a lot of valuable friends, and they didn't really talk about it. Those guys in the Korean War and the World War II, they just didn't really talk about it much. It talked to him about ships. He'll talk about Navy ships, forever. That's what he would talk to me about. When I would come over, he'd talk to me about the Navy ships and the weather. And I was like, I had such a hard time relating to that, because I'm like, I don't really care about Navy ships, and I go outside and it's either raining or sunny. I don't care, women are funny that way. We either wear a sweater when it's raining or we don't, It's just the weather. But men talk about weather. At least my dad talked about weather, and that's the way that he loved me. But we were, because of the work that I've done in here and because of people challenging me, sponsors telling me, you need to tell him that you love him, I was free with my dad. We just visited, because he died in March. He's buried out at Fort Rosecrans, and we went over there and we saw him. And it's just to have that type of peace, to know that I know him nothing and that we were fine. You can't trade that. You can't trade that. I will never have to. I don't owe my dad anything. I was good. I was a good daughter to him. And he was a good dad to me. And right now I'm trying to be a good daughter to my mother. And AA has taught me how to do that. It's taught me to show up, take her to movies, take her to dinner, and, just to be there for her. And so that, because not only did she lose a partner, but now her life is completely different. And so I try to do that. So I've been sober. I have walked through a lot of different things. Getting married was interesting. Getting divorced was interesting. I can tell you, when you get married in AA, one of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to get divorced in AA, because everybody's kind of looking at you like, why couldn't you make it work? You're an idiot? And you're like, yes. And I found, I think I relate more to dogs than, to cats. I mean, the therapist said, Melody, you might just be a confirmed bachelor. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm paying you for that. But, I'm okay with that today. And today I live a really, really good life. I went to school to become a nurse, and I did that. And that was the hardest thing I've ever done. I mean, I had seizures in nursing school because I wasn't sleeping and I was studying. And the seizures come from my head injuries from my automobile accident, But that was a really hard thing. And I love what I do today. I'm not saying that it's the easiest thing, right? the insanity of the ER, oh my God. And I have to say, I'm very privileged. Every single day I meet people that are dying from the disease of alcoholism. And I try to share the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I let them know that there's a way out. And a lot of times you will hear in meetings people saying, yeah, the doctors know what to do. We're not professionals. A doctor will walk in the room and they'll go, you know what? You need to stop drinking. And then they walk out. And then the person in the room goes, really? And they don't know what to do. And then I'm sitting there laughing. And they're like, why are you laughing? And I said, because I have a solution. And it's a great, it is a group of men and women. See, we're a group of men and women that were going down on the Titanic. It was going down and we were dying. And all we did is we said something like, God, please help me. Or we said, I want a different way. Or I can't live like this anymore. And we jumped off the boat and got into the life raft. And ever since we've been in the life raft, we're just rowing. We're just rowing. And when you're rowing, you're in the group. And they tell you to stay in the pack. They tell you to stay in the herd of elephants. Be with us. That's what they're saying. The people that go on the outside, that don't go to meetings, don't do things, that don't work with others, they get picked off. And I don't know why that is. I can't tell you why that is. But it does happen. And that's my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. The people that stay busy, go to meetings, they're the ones that stay here. But I can tell you the one thing that will get you drunk is taking a drink. If you don't drink, if you don't drink, you will not get drunk. I swear that is my experience. You can act as bad as you want. You can make the biggest mistakes that you've ever made. I mean, I've heard really good mistakes, like people in AA marrying the person that they divorced again. And then they divorced him again because they then remembered why they divorced him in the first place. You know, so, and I almost made that mistake. So, I mean, you know, we can do things here that people don't get to do. I'm a church person. I've always gone to church. I like church because church makes me try to be better. I'm a Methodist, and one of the things that we say all the time is do all the good you can to all the people you can, in all the ways you can, at all the times that you can, for as long as you can. And that's my motto. I'm really trying to live by that today, but I wouldn't even be able to even grab that concept around my head, my little tiny TB brain of a head, if I wasn't sober. When I'm drinking, I can't even get off the couch. When I'm drinking, I'm of little use to nobody. And in one part in the book, but my sponsor talks about that I really love. It says our purpose is to be of maximum service to those, to God and people about us. To be of maximum service means if the homeless guy out on the Fiesta Island doesn't have any food, fix him a lunch. Get them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some water. If you see somebody that's walking down the street that looks lost, ask them if they need help. It's not only alcoholics, it is the world about us. And in the olden days, in the little red book, it used to say to help others. They took that out and they said alcoholics. And I wish they never did, but that's, you know, they just changed it, and that's fine. And thank God for the Jew in the first, you know, 100. The Jew in the first 100 said, hey, you guys can't make this a Christian thing. If you make this a Christian thing, you're going to lose a lot of people. There's a lot of people that need to stop drinking, and they're not Christians. And I thank God for that. Because even though we were founded on a Christian ideology, because the United States in, you know, 75 years ago was kind of Christian mentality, you know, that's the way that the group was founded. That there's a group called the Washingtonians, and the Washingtonians did something, and then they got defunct. They did something that didn't work anymore, arguing, inner house bickering, and then they went away side. Same with the Oxford group. The Oxford group was doing something, and then they started arguing between each other, and then that group defunct. We're still going. And there's something about this here, the traditions that we keep doing. And because of that, we still get to stay here. And this, I hope that this is around for my nephew. I think my nephew might have a problem someday. A couple of years ago, my brother, they thought was having a heart attack. The doctor told him after you had an angiogram, you're not having a heart attack. And they're like, you can have a glass of wine a day. And I thought, what doctor would say that to him if he doesn't even know if he's an alcoholic or not? You know, and so my nephew, who's like 7 years old at the time, comes running home and saying, we get to have wine at the house. And I'm like, oh, great, 7 years old, that he's, oh, great. You know, so my thing is I want this seat available for my nephew. So I have to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous is going to be here. So that's the only reason why I don't say my last name at the level of press, radio, and television. They asked us not to do that because when people do that, what happens is that, and we've known people in the industry, you know, in the movie industry and stuff like that, that said that they were recovering alcoholics and then they drink and then they go to jail and everybody goes, see, it doesn't work. So, you know, we're supposed to remain anonymous for a reason. But at work, I'm not anonymous. People know I'm sober. I tell people I'm sober. I'm telling them that if they ever need anything, if their patients need anything, that I'm available. And so, you know, I try to do that. I meet people at work that I say to them, would you like to go to an AA meeting? Because if you would, I'll pick you up. And I can tell you probably 1 in 50 say I'll go. When they tell me their excuses, like I can't, I got this and this and this and I'm doing this and no, I don't want that and I'm not, and I'm just like, okay. And you know, I've had to watch people die in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we do that sometimes. Sometimes we do bury people. And will we all stay sober? I don't know. I believe that if you don't drink and use a day at a time, you will not die drunk. That's what I've seen in AA. If you don't drink and use, you will not die drunk. And so that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to be of maximum service to the people about us. And let's see how much, where are we at now? I have 5 minutes left? Ooh, look at that. You know, it is a special time of year for me, and I am incredibly, I cannot pay Alcoholics Anonymous back for what it's given me. I mean, when I talk about a fourth dimension, I love to do gardening down now, and a lot of my days, when I'm off of work, I'm in my backyard gardening. I'm planting plants, I'm watching hummingbirds, you know, fly in and out. And one of my favorite things is when I'm watering my garden, hummingbirds will come and they kind of go underneath the water. And one day when I was watering, the hummingbird kind of just sat on the water. And I was like, God. And I saw God in like the smallest of things. And the Buddhists know this all along. They're the ones that, like, when they're building temples, if there's an ant thing going down, they build it around the ant farm. Because they know everything is interconnected. They know that it is all interconnected. We are all interconnected. Animals, plants, the universe. And I can't even, you know, really, I can't even comprehend the universe, because when we think about this little Earth and that this is one galaxy and then there's millions of galaxies out there, millions, and that on the timeline, we're only about 2 minutes. Humans are only about 2 minutes. And I try to tell people all the time, you only get about 80 years. Some get less, some get more, but we only get about 80 years. Don't waste another minute on your drinking. Your drinking will take everything that you value. It will take your kids, your relationships, your self-esteem, everything. And I can't give that to people. That seat right there, that seat that's my seat, that's the only thing I'm responsible for. That's all I can take care of is my seat. And you are all responsible for your seat. And that's the deal. But what you can do while you're responsible for your seat is like, hey, do you need a ride home? Can I work central office and do phones? I mean, I loved central office, the phones, the calls that come in. I have to do this one last. A couple of months ago, this girl called who I had worked with a couple of years ago, and she just can't stop drinking. She just can't stop drinking. And she calls and she goes, I'm in a crisis. And I'm like, really? And she goes, yes. And then she went on about how she lost her wallet and this, that, and the other thing. And I said, Michelle? And then she goes, Melody? And I said, this sounds exactly like what you called me 2 years ago. Is there somebody else I can talk to? And then she didn't want to talk. I always said, well, Kim's here. And she goes, I don't want to talk to Kim. And I said, well. And so we spent that, you know, 30 minutes on the phone or whatever. And, you know, she knows where AA is. She knows where AA is, you know, and that's the comedy of it. But some of the sad things, I mean, I do get to sit with families where the wife is crying. And I'm not kidding. I have story after story after story. And a lot of reasons why I can't tell the stories is sometimes because people get fired. But I'm not mentioning names, so I think I'm okay. You know, but the sad things is like, and I mean, if talking about trauma in the ER is almost, I'm not kidding, 75% is due to drugs and alcohol. 75%. Car accidents, fights in bars. And when I talk to people and they're, I mean, you're 24 years old and you're in the ER just once. due to drugs and alcohol. That's not normal drinking. That's not normal drinking. I had a Marine one night that got beat up by a bunch of guys because he got too drunk and he couldn't protect himself. I said, you know, that's not normal drinking. And then he tried to tell me, yeah, but my girl Marine was getting harassed. And I said, she's a Marine. You don't think a girl Marine can protect herself? You are sorely mistaken. Those girls know how to protect themselves. They don't need you. And so what he did is he smarted off and he was drunk and he got the, you know, he got beat up pretty bad, you know. And we see that all the time. And the sad stories are the guy that, you know, the Vietnam vet that stabbed and he was drunk and was his friend and they started arguing and then somebody got stabbed and he came in, you know, and en route, the one thing you learn, never pull anything out. You know, if you have a stick in you or a knife in you, don't pull it out. It's occluding something. Once you pull it out, boom, the blood starts to flow. So, you know, he pulled it out and he was in the trauma room and he says, am I going to be okay? And everybody's kind of like, oh God, you know, and he didn't make it. You know, that's how we die. We die deaths like that. Or we die drinking ourselves to death in a hotel room or jumping off a bridge. You know, our liver failure, you know, many years later when you're like this and you have to keep being drained. And it's not a pretty death either. So 2 minutes left. Okay. So am I talking about the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous? We're not a glum lot. We love stories like that, right? You know, come on. You're like, give me another one. You know, but, you know, I'm very fortunate the job that I do, and I really like what I do. And but, yesterday, what were you guys doing yesterday? Maybe you were like me thinking, I wish I could win the lottery. I wanted to win the lottery yesterday, you know. I was thinking, oh, God, I could open up an animal rescue place and go to Africa and help out over there. And, you know, there's so many things that I could do with $230 million that would really go down to $150 million. But I could live off $150 million, you know. But really, wouldn't have made any difference to me. I'm really happy in my life. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings. I'm active. I have friends. We have parties. I go camping every year with a bunch of girlfriends in Alcoholics Anonymous. We go to Yosemite. A couple years ago, we were chasing bears out of our campsite, you know. I mean, I live a good life. I live a good life. I had a cup of coffee today and a shower. I've been overpaid. I'm not kidding. I've been overpaid. In meetings, you'll hear people complain all the time about what they don't have. Okay, 1 minute left. But I got more! No. You know, the fourth dimension for me is that I get it now. A couple of years ago, there was this guy that I went to high school with that had cerebral palsy, and I had come to the stoplight up in Claremont, and I saw him walking across the intersection, and I saw him struggling just to walk across, and he almost fell twice. And you know what? My heart said to me, you've never had it so good. You're so lucky. You've never had to struggle to put clothes on. You've never fallen in a shower because you don't have your balance, you know? I mean, I'm sure I did when I was drinking, but not sober. Not sober. And the thing is I have such a good life. Such a good life today. And it's with struggles. I mean, today was one of those days. I had to pay a plumber, and I was like, I didn't know how I was going to pay him because I didn't have enough in my bank account, you know. And thank God I inherited some money a couple years ago when an uncle died. You know, that's enough that when I have to pay my property taxes and things like that, I can write a check and I don't freak out. But, you know, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. But I don't have a family of four. And I'm not living on $24,000 or $30,000 a year. So I've never had it so good. And I feel very blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to go away. I hope I stay here forever. But I know that if I start thinking that my ideas are better than anybody else's and I start defending my life and I start not being honest with people, with my sponsor, and I'm not accountable, I will probably buy my ticket outside that door. And so I never really want to go outside that door. I like it in here. I like you guys. You're the guys that we may not normally mix, but you're the guys that I would have sat on a bar stool with and, you know, shot the stories with and had a great time with and maybe fought with. Yeah, we would have done that in a bar. Yeah. You know, that's what we do, you know. But it's one of those seasons. This is a season of renewal. You know, right this week is a season of renewal. And I would wish for you that there's a lot of newcomers here tonight. If you're having a problem with drinking, go up to somebody after in the meeting. You can come and talk to me and say, I don't think I can stop. And just start coming to a meeting, be a regular attender, and just ask God, and the God of your understanding, whoever it is, it could be the ocean, it could be, don't make it a doorknob, I don't know, but people do, but make it the ocean or the stars or something like that, and just say, please help me. And those little prayers add up, and someday you will be sober. Someday you will be sober. I wish you the best in this holiday season. I wish you the best in Alcoholics Anonymous, and just keep coming back. Right on.